And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Eric L. from La Mesa.
My name is Eric and I'm powerless over alcohol. I got a list of stuff that I want to talk about tonight. But actually, you know, before I do that, I want to ask a couple of questions. And before I do that, I want to welcome the folks who are new to Alcoholics Anonymous. And to let you know that this is a society of people who actually do want to help us stay sober. And I didn't believe that when I first got here. I thought it was some kind of a scam. I really did. Then I found out that it really wasn't a scam, and I got scared. So I just kind of want to kind of get a sense of the. I want to kind of get a sense of the room. How many of you tonight came here because you needed to be here? Raise your hands. That's fair. How many of you came here tonight because you wanted to be here? Okay. How many of you came here tonight because you were expecting to be entertained? We've got a problem. And the problem is with your speaker tonight. I wasn't counting on that. For the folks who need to be here, I'm glad you're here. For the folks who want to be here, and especially for the folks who are here supporting me from Mira Mesa, the Mira Mesa Milano Club, thank you very much. That Milano Club in the last 5 years has been the most incredible source of companionship and fellowship and friendship. And I haven't even made full use of it. I've just made a little bit of use of it, but still, it's an amazing place. And if anybody has not visited the Mira Mesa Milano Club, please come on up. Great people, and really a group of people who care. I want to thank the Speaker Selection Committee for asking me to be here tonight. I understand that there was one dissenting vote and that there were two yes votes. Felix, thank you for voting yes twice. I appreciate it. And Al, too bad. You know, I'm sort of blessed because I got to spend a retreat with Al, well, for a Friday night and a Sunday morning. Last year, and it was great, and it's the same retreat that I kind of plan on going. Oh, George is holding up the flyer saying, please plug Rocket Riders. So yeah, you know what, we have a great men's retreat, and it's coming up next weekend, and in fact the retreat master's here tonight, right now. I'm looking right at him. So you know, it's bound to be a great time, and I wouldn't have said that except I made a phone call yesterday. Hey, Bob. How are you, man? I'm looking at him. Bob's one of my heroes. I made a phone call. And it was just like a guy that I met when I was 5 months sober. And it was the first trip to Sacramento. First trip out of my area that I'd ever made in sobriety. And it was an Alcathon meeting. And I walked in there. It might have been like Christmas Eve or Christmas night. And I raised my hand. And I was Eric from Los Angeles. And I was an alcoholic and an addict. And they asked if the visitor from Los Angeles wanted to share, and I said, yeah, I don't know how you guys stay sober. You guys do it all wrong. And I got about the same reaction from them as I'm getting from you. But as a result, I got a bunch of guys that came around me, and one of them, I called yesterday morning, and he celebrated 19 years of sobriety on June 8th of this year. And I started listening to what he's gone through. Son of a gun. He's gone through the same stuff I'm going through this year. You know, he's felt like drinking. He lost his purpose. He had no motivation. And he said, and I went up for this little visit up in Mount Shasta for 4 days. And I came back and I was motivated and I had purpose. I'm going, wow, and the retreat is next weekend and I have an obligation. And I'm going to talk a little bit Actually, you know what? I'm going to talk a little bit about service tonight. And not because it's something that I do a lot, but because it's something I really think is important. But before I do that, one of the things in Alcoholics Anonymous is we like to take informed group consciences. And in order to take an informed group conscience, you have to know what it is that we're going to take a group conscience about. So I want to take a group conscience tonight. And you can vote as many times as you want. And what I actually did was I said, you know, I'm going to write down a few topics. Because that's the kind of guy I am. If I know what I'm talking about, then I can be articulate. Or not. So here are the topics that I came up with for tonight. And one of them comes right out of chapter 5 of the Big Book. You know, and it says our stories disclosed in a general way what we used to be like, what it used to be like, what happened and what it's like now. You know, I can talk about the 12 steps. I can talk about service, unity, and recovery, and I say them in that order because I say them in that order. I can talk about my problems today. I can talk about sponsorship. I can talk about balance, and I can talk about how, H-O-W, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So now that you all know what all the topics are, we're just going to take a little, this is one of these, like I said, this is one of those these group conscience things where you want to make sure that people kind of know what they're going to vote about. So anybody who wants to hear about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, raise your hands. Okay. The 12 steps. Boy, that was pretty weak. Service, unity, and recovery. This is not looking good. My problems today. I see hands waving. No. Sponsorship. Balance. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. It looks like it's going to be what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And the good news about that is it's right out of the book. It really is right out of the book. Because our stories do disclose in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it was like now. And so you're going to get probably about 3.5 minutes of a drunk log. Because all I'm going to do is going to qualify as an alcoholic. And alcohol was not my only problem. When I came into this program in July of 1989, I was a social drinker and a recreational drug user. Need I say more? You know, I used to like to think that alcoholism was contagious and that you caught it by going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I don't think that's so far from the truth sometimes. And I've also been informed by knowing members of Alcoholics Anonymous that not all people in Alcoholics Anonymous are alcoholics. And in fact, I actually have a couple of friends here. I have one friend here that's a non-alcoholic who I invited to hear my story because he's known me for 11 years. He's never heard this side of me. He's heard all the other sides of me, but he hasn't heard this side of me. Real simple, man, what it was like. I liked to drink. And I felt like I had the right to drink. And I felt like none of you were going to get in the way of my drinking. And my mom was not going to. And my wife was not going to. And my kids were not going to. And my boss was not going to. Nobody was going to get in the way of my drinking. Gall darn it. I'd say it a little bit stronger, but... And when I drank, you know, what I discovered is that once I put that first drink in me, I really didn't know where it was going to take me. I didn't know if I was going to end up drunk or end up a little buzzed or a lot buzzed or leave all my money on the bar or go off on some journey. Any of you take any of those journeys? I thought so. I must be in the right place. And some of the journeys didn't go too far from home. In fact, some of the journeys went from my front door out to my front patio. That was about it. You know, we talk about taking a trip, not taking a trip. That was about as far as I could get. And some of those journeys took me to some very interesting places that I don't remember. Because if I'm in the right room, when I drank, sometimes I didn't remember what happened. I drank so much that I didn't remember what happened. And I didn't think that was unusual. See, in Alcoholics Anonymous, for those of you who are new, we don't think it's unusual to drink to the point of what we call blacking out. So I can remember a lot of nights drinking, going out to my car, putting my key in the door lock, unlocking it, and that was the last thing I remembered until the next morning. And I'd go out in my car the next morning. First I'd go out and I'd open the blinds and kind of peek out and go, whew, my car is there. That was the first issue that I had to deal with. Then I would put on a pair of shorts and the sandals and I'd go out and walk around my car and see if there were any new scratches in it. I remember coming out of a blackout once just as my car was sideswiping a center median strip. And I see the heads nodding going, yeah, I've done that. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things that we do is we relate similar experiences with each other. And we go, well, you know what, I may not have drank as much as he did or she did. And it's not a contest, by the way. It's not Alcoholics Anonymous is not a contest about who drank more. It's about what the alcohol did to us. So what I'm going to do is tell you that alcohol did these things to me. It kept me from going home at night to a wife and two infant babies. It kept me from doing my job very well because I was one of those guys that liked to go out at lunchtime and have a few drinks. And about an hour and a half or 2 hours later, struggling my way back into the office. And in my experience now, what I discovered is that all that did is fed the obsession. Because by 4 o'clock, by four, in the early stages, by 4:30, I was kind of antsy and itchy, and I got to get out of here. I got to go finish the job. And then it became 4 o'clock, and then it became 3:30, and then it became I'm not going back to work. After lunch, yeah, which is cracking up going, yeah, I did that one. And I'll tell you about the last really big drunk. And it was the 4th of July weekend in 1989. And for some reason, I remember it being a 5-day weekend. And it was an artificially created 5-day. You see, Alcoholics Anonymous is not the right place to say 5-day weekend. Because a lot of us have taken 5 and 7 day weekends before. So it was a 5-day weekend for me. I don't know how I did that, but I wrangled a 5-day weekend out of it. And my next door neighbor and I were drinking buddies, and just so that you know, my alcoholism isn't pure alcoholism. There was some recreational drug use involved in my story too. So my neighbor was my drinking buddy and my using buddy and all that stuff. And we decided to go get, some of you may remember, some of you quit drinking before these became vogue, but there were these little beer balls. They're like a gallon and a half or 2 gallons of beer, and you dump some ice in it, and it's got like its own little tap. And it was really cool. It was better than getting a pony keg, because sometimes I'd actually have to waste part of a pony keg because I couldn't get enough people to drink all that beer with me. And I didn't like beer. I didn't like the taste of beer, but it was easy, so I drank it. So you know, we piled up the booze, and we were all ready. It was Thursday night. And we had all these great plans for all these things we're going to do, take the kids to the beach and have a picnic and do some projects and all that stuff went right out on Thursday night. You know, woke up on Friday morning, we started drinking again, kept drinking. It went all the way through Monday afternoon. And like I said, there were some other substances involved in that weekend. And every promise that I made to my wife and my kids that weekend was completely broken. I think we took the kids to the beach for about an hour. My neighbor and I took the kids to the beach for about an hour until the booze that we brought with us ran out. And he said, oh, gotta go, kids. Let's go. You know, and it sounds funny on the surface, but you know, when I go back and I look at how I treated my sons since I've been sober, it's a lot different. It's completely different. And that's a life ruled by alcohol. And that's what happens to us alcoholics. We're ruled by alcohol. So a couple weeks after that, after a few more long weekends, it's a Saturday morning and my wife and my neighbors are sitting in the front lawn. It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday and I'm frantically searching in the refrigerator because I was one of those guys that hid booze just like the rest of you. Even those who haven't admitted it yet, you hid some booze somewhere. I opened up that vegetable bin and grabbed that last can of beer. Yeah, that one that I hid so that you guys couldn't find it. Because that was the best cure for a hangover for me, man. A little bit of the hair of the dog that bit me. Cracked that beer open, went out the front yard, and there they were sitting, and there were four chairs and three occupied, and it looked like the empty one was supposed to be for me. And it kind of looked like a little AA meeting. Except it was. Except they didn't know it. And they said, we're tired of living this way, and we're not doing it anymore. And we're quitting. All the stuff. Are you in or out? And there I am with my beer in my hand saying, no, I'm still having fun. 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And some of you have seen that look on your significant other's face, that one of a combination of disgust, frustration, disappointment, anguish, and I quit. And that was the look that she gave me. And it was just a couple of days later when she packed the kids up and she left. And actually, I was living up in L.A. I was living up in the Hermosa Beach area at the time. And she packed the kids up and I said, where are you going? She said, I'm coming down. Her mom lives down here. In fact, her mom lives 5 blocks from here. A little close to home. Oh, by the way, do I qualify as a local if I drank at Pal Joey's? Then I'm a local drunk. So she packed the kids up and she said, I'm going down to my mom's for a little while. I said, why? She said, oh, I don't know, I just need some time away. I said, okay, have a good time. And that was like carte blanche, man. Now I get to go drink and use the way I wanted. And I did. And I did for about a week. And then I came out of that week and I go, holy cow, why'd she leave? So I went to go see this lady at work. And she asked me some questions about my drinking and my drug use. And there used to be this little 20 questions card. I don't know if we have one in the literature rack now. But she pulled it out, and she didn't let me see it. She just started asking me the questions off of it. Probably the smartest thing she's ever done. Probably the biggest blessing I've ever had in my life. She starts asking me those questions, and I lied just well enough to get help. I think I answered yes to 7 of the questions, and you only have to answer yes to 3, supposedly. I don't think that test is accurate. I would have told her too. I would have told her, I don't think this test is accurate, if she had shown it to me. Or if I'd been able to look at the questions, I would have been able to lie a little bit better. Or if I'd been able to look at the answer, if you answer yes to 3 or more, you are an alcoholic. And she sent me to this outpatient program, and they said, we think we can help you. Come back tomorrow. And so that night, July 25th, 1989, I cleaned it out. And I don't remember how much was left. For those of you who are into brands and varieties and everything else, I was a Scotch drinker. I always had a bottle of Chivas Regal, and I loved single malt Scotches. And I did not like the taste of beer. But I drank it anyways. Because I drank for the effect. Not for the taste.
So I went into this program, and they said, we think we can help you, and come on back the next day. And I went back the next day, and I was scared, and I said, I'm going to give this thing a try for 30 days. Because my objective was to get the wife and the kids back. That was the only thing I wanted. And they tricked me in that program. They told me I had to go to two of these A&A meetings every week. And I was already going there five nights a week plus Saturday mornings. And I said, how can you possibly expect me to have time to do that? And they smiled very politely and they said, you'll find a way. And I did. Because I wanted to get A's. I wanted to graduate from this thing because I knew what the end was going to be. So they said I had to find one of these people. They called it a sponsor. And I said, what's a sponsor? And they looked at me and they said, when you see it, you'll know it. And I said, I don't think so. But they explained to me, they actually did explain to me what a sponsor was. They said, somebody who's going to help you go through this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This recovery program was one of those feeder programs that fed people into AA, fed people into 12 steps. And I found the guy, he had about 5 years sober at the time. And he looked really serene, and he had a blade of grass in his mouth, and he looked really cool. I said, that's him. That's the guy. I asked him if he'd be my temporary sponsor. He said, I don't know anything about this temporary sponsorship stuff, but you're going to call me every day, and we're going to get together once a week, and we're going to go through this book, this big old thick book. And I said, okay. And I remember the first time I opened the big book and started reading it, I fell asleep in about 15 minutes. Hasn't changed much since. But he and I went through this book once a week, every Monday night, for a long time. And he took me through the book, and he took me through the steps. And I'll be forever grateful to him, because I was an alcoholic of the type that did not believe that any of you wanted to help me, and that I was really going to have to do this alone. So about 9 months into this sobriety thing, newcomers and anybody else in this room, you hear really neat little cliches like 90 meetings in 90 days. Hey, if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous and you just want to get started in this thing, my recommendation is that you go to as many meetings as you possibly can. Don't limit yourself to any 90 meetings in 90 days. In the first 90 days of sobriety, I probably went to 220 meetings because I didn't have any place else to go. My old drug-using friends cast me aside because they were afraid I was going to narc on them. My drinking buddies... valid fear. I wasn't going to, but, my drinking buddies didn't like me anymore because I didn't leave a lot of money up on the bar. And I left early and, things like that. I got some really good advice when I first got sober. They said, when the drinks start jumping out at you, go ahead and leave. You go wherever you want to go, but when the bottles start getting really big, leave. Okay. I was one of the very fortunate alcoholics where the obsession to drink was lifted very early. The desire to drink wasn't lifted necessarily, but the obsession to drink was lifted. And I didn't feel that burning, absolute desire, that uncontrollable desire to drink. It went away really quick. Nine months into sobriety, I got the letter. The letter that was basically the one that says, I'm filing for divorce. And this was a woman who did not trust me to be around my own sons, even though every morning I was the one that fed them and changed their diapers and did what I could before I went to work. And it was usually before I got high or drunk also. And so my visitation with my sons for the first year was very, very limited, and it was supervised for the most part, not by any officials, but by her. You know, she just wanted to keep an eye and make sure that she could trust me with our sons. But I got that letter, and I had to come down to San Diego because she filed here, and I remember driving back up Interstate 5 right through San Onofre, and that desire to drink just hit. And it hit like gangbusters. And I pulled off in San Clemente, and I called my sponsor, and I said, I feel like drinking, man, and I think I'm going to go find one. And he said, nope, why don't you make it to the meeting tonight, and we'll see what happens. Let's see what happens after the meeting. If you want to drink after the meeting, you know, we'll talk about it. But let's just get you to the meeting tonight. And I begrudgingly agreed with him. And I made it to that meeting, and that was probably the strongest desire I've had to drink in 19 years. I'm happy to say that I got through the divorce unscathed, and I didn't like it. Just like I've not liked a lot of other things that have happened in my sobriety. A lot of things that have happened. You know, I sort of feel it's a responsibility to let you know that, you know, just because you get sober doesn't mean that all these wonderful things are going to start happening in your life. There are some good things that do happen. The first thing that happens is we don't have to look over our shoulder anymore to see if anybody saw us driving drunk or noticed what we did in the blackout or anything like that. We don't have to worry about our behavior in those ways. But we still go through all the same life struggles, and sometimes even worse. You know, I've got a friend that's walking through the back right now that he didn't have cancer when he got sober, but he does now. And you know what? He's got a hell of an attitude, a really great attitude towards it. So, no, life doesn't the world doesn't just open up, and we don't just automatically have this wonderfully beautiful, perfect life just because we got sober. What we have, though, is we have an opportunity. We have an opportunity to do a number of things, and I want to talk about some of those number of things that we have the opportunity to do. First and foremost, we have an opportunity to give this away to other people. Not only do we have an opportunity, but we have a responsibility to do that. Because if it hadn't been for that guy who said, I don't know anything about temporary sponsorship, but I'll, you know, but you do this, and I'll work with you. By the way, I'm not the best sponsee in the world, if you guys haven't figured that out yet. I go through sponsors quicker than I go through cars. In the length of my sobriety, I've gone through 8 of them. And my future ex-sponsor is sitting in the audience tonight. Sorry, Tim, I had to do that. But you know what? Each one of those sponsors has brought a little something different into my life. And they've all... I wish I could be one of those people who say, they gave me exactly what I needed at the time. No! They didn't give me exactly what I needed at the time. You know, some of them gave me absolutely no guidance, but it's because I asked for no guidance. You know, I say, hey, you know what? I've just moved down here from San Diego. I've got about 10 years sober, and I just need somebody to check in with every once in a while. Would you sponsor me? That's not a sponsor. You know, a sponsor is someone who will take me through the steps. Someone who, when I bring an issue to him, he asks me, where is that in the steps? Or have you written about it? Or when are you going to make amends for your behavior? Or which character defect is that that you need to turn over to your higher power? That's another point of amusement with me, by the way, those of us who say, I'm working on my character defects. I believe step 6, where are the steps? Way over there. You know, step 6 has something to do with character defects and being entirely willing to be rid of all of them. And step seven is something about humbly asking him to remove our shortcomings. I don't see anything where it says work on your character defects there. Sorry, that's just my opinion. Actually, you know what? It's been my experience, too. It has been my experience, because there have been things that I've been willing to give up. One of them was a sense of humiliation and embarrassment. And that's been taken away from me in this last year, and I don't remember asking to have it taken away. But it's been taken away. So where was I before I... Oh, before I zigged. Before I zigged, I was zagging with the sponsorship thing. And... By the way, Alan, thank you for the story. Thank you for the 10 minutes. Alan told me the end of the story. Because he got duck whistled right at the best part of the story. And if you want to know the end of the story, catch him at the end of the meeting. It's tragic. It's almost tragic. As there are a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, some things are tragic. This one wasn't that tragic, though. So right now, you know, my sponsor needs to ask me, hey, you know, have you written about it? Which character defect is that? Are you willing to give it up? Who do you need to make amends to? I had to make amends the other day to somebody that I offended. And for those of you, and I've got one or two friends in this room, and those of you who are my friends know that I can be very brusque and a little heavy-handed. And I was a little heavy-handed in a business dealing that I had, because I told the guy, no, this is how we're going to do it. I don't care what you've heard or what you've seen. This is how we're going to do it. And basically he took it as, we don't need you anymore. And that was not what the CEO, that was not the message the CEO wanted transmitted. And I remember talking to my girlfriend and saying, I'm not making amends to that guy. I am not making amends to him, because I was right. Deadlier words have never been spoken by a recovering alcoholic. I'm not making amends because, doggone it, I was right. So the CEO calls me the next day. He says, looks like you hurt John's feelings. I said, and I really want to say, well, you know what, John's just a little too sensitive. But I held my tongue, because that's one of the things I've learned to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned how to hold my tongue and listen. You know, because when I'm in a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, normally there's an hour and a half of a meeting, and I might be talking for three of it and listening for the other 87 minutes of it. So I've learned how to listen. Alcoholics Anonymous is a great place to practice listening. So I listened to him. I kept my mouth shut for once. And he says, yeah, and I would really like it if you would go and make amends to him. Oh, baby. The toughest part about making amends sometimes is sticking to our side of the street. So I couldn't say, John, you know, I think you were a little too sensitive when we were having that conversation. And you know, all those accusations that you made of me trying to control the conversation, you know, you were trying to control it just as much as I was. And I had to say, you know what, John? I came on way too strong. And I want to apologize for offending you. And he said, you know, I accept your apology. What it made me feel like is that you guys really... he said, it just felt like a big up yours. And I don't know, and I know what that feeling is. That up yours feeling. Anybody ever have a sponsee drink? Yeah, that up yours feeling. You know, is that kind of a feeling? And I could relate to him on those terms. And I said, you know, what I want to do is find a way to work with you effectively. And words like that don't normally come out of my mouth. Because I'm one of those guys that really likes to think it's my way or the highway. Still, you know, maybe a character defect, maybe not. Don't know. But But if it gets in the way of my usefulness to you, to God and to my fellows, it probably is a character defect. That's been my experience around here. I have a duty today. And part of my duty is to plug something. So I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it with no fear and no embarrassment. I'm going to plug something around here, something that we around here call service. And as I look around this room, I see people who are of service to this program and who have been of service to this program. And I want to share just a little bit about what service has done for me. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was probably like 6 months, 8 months sober. My sponsor was very heavily involved in a lot of service work. He answered phones at central office. He did H&I work. And what he told me is that if they ask for a volunteer for something in Alcoholics Anonymous and you are capable of doing it, you raise your hand. So I've washed ashtrays, and I've counted money, and I've been there to open the door, and I've made coffee, and I've washed coffee pots, and I've mopped floors, and I've taken panels into jails and other institutions. And there's a blessing that comes from doing that kind of service. And I didn't expect anything out of it. I really honestly did not. It was just part of that, what I thought was that 12th step work, especially the H&I stuff. But what I've discovered is that it's even more than that. I've been involved in something called general service for about the last 4.5 years. And for those of you who have been general service representatives or district committee members or area delegates or chairpersons of committees, my hat is off to you, and I thank you for your service. I got into service in the beginning because I just wanted to find a way to give something back to my group. It was that pure and that simple. My home group, which is the Mira Mesa Sunday morning men's stag, we meet at 9 a.m. at the Mira Mesa Alano Club, needed a general service representative. Well, they didn't need a general service representative. But I needed a service commitment. I needed something to keep me going back to my home group every week, every Sunday morning. So there was something called a general service representative. I didn't know what it was. I was 14 years sober at the time. I really didn't know what a general service rep was. I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous for almost 15 years. Had no idea what a GSR was. And I raised my hand. And I said, I'll do it. And I had an opportunity to serve my group. And I do the little report and everybody falls asleep. And just like all of you in the fellowship do, you fall asleep, the general service rep is going to give the report. You all start falling asleep. This is that New York thing. You know what? My view of service has changed just a little bit. And now the reason that I give that time and that energy to Alcoholics Anonymous is because I want Alcoholics Anonymous to be around. It's been around here for what, 75 years, 78 years, 73 years. And I want Alcoholics Anonymous to be around for my sons if they need it, and for my grandchildren if they need it, and for my great-grandchildren if they need it, and on and on and on and on. And the only way that that's going to happen is if people like you and me do our part to make sure that Alcoholics Anonymous is around. And the way that I've chosen to do it is by being involved in general service and in making sure that my group has its voice in Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. And that's all it is. It's a lot of activity, and it's a lot of commitment, but I've gotten a better understanding of what Alcoholics Anonymous is as an organization. You know, there's the fellowship, and there's the fellowship, and there's what we do in individual recovery, and there's what we do and what we do worldwide, and what we do as a country, and what we do as alcoholics. For instance, would you like to have a say in whether or not we translate the Big Book into Tongan? I guess not. And that's perfectly okay. If you don't want to help Alcoholics Anonymous make those kinds of decisions, you know, that's a privilege that you have. You know, you don't have to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous at all. You don't have to show up for a meeting. But you know, I'd like these meetings to be around. I'd like these kinds of meetings to be around for the next 70 years or so, 80 years, 100 years. So what I've become willing to do is to just do my part. And sometimes it's a big part, and sometimes it's not such a big part. And I don't beat myself up about how little I give or how much I give anymore. You know, because whatever I have to give is what I have to give. And that's true of all of us. So that's like my service. And the same thing goes for hospitals and institutions. Just a show of hands. How many of you have ever gone into a hospital institution as part of H&I on a panel? You know, and I'll tell you the feeling that I have when I walk out, especially when I walk out of a jail. And other people have shared this sentiment. I have a lot of gratitude when I walk out of a jail. Because I'm walking out. That's right. I'm walking out. And while I'm there, I have this great joy because we're bringing a message to the folks who were there who may be trying to get sober, may just be trying to get out of their cells for an hour and a half. Hey, it doesn't matter why they're going. It doesn't matter. What matters is that I'm there to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous for them. Whether they really want it sincerely or whether they just want to get out of whatever it is that they're trying to get out of. And you know what? I've met some really solid sober guys in jail. I've taken panels into detox. The old 11 Island, you know, rest in peace. And you know, I'd go in there and the first thing I'd ask them is, how many of you have been to detox before? And all the hands would go up. And I go, how many of you have done Alcoholics Anonymous before? And all the hands would go up. I go, say, good, we're not talking to a bunch of strangers. We're talking to a bunch of people who know what this thing is about. So let's talk about what this thing is about. And the panel speakers proceed to do that. And you know, every once in a while, we get a success story. You know, one of the guys I'm sponsoring right now is a detox success story, not from San Diego, but from another neck of the woods. You know, he went into detox the last time, a little over 7 years ago, and he hasn't had to go back since. Serious disease we have, isn't it? Yeah? It's kind of a sobering thought to think about people going in and out of... Yeah. It is a sobering thought, though. Thinking about people who are going in and out of detox. You know, in and out of recovery centers. And how it might be your message that gets through to them. It might not be my message. It might be your message. Yeah, I mean, the Big Book talks about it, you know. It was written before we had this plethora of meetings. I was actually talking to my... I can't remember who I was talking to. But But I was talking to somebody, I said, you know what, if I went to a different meeting every night on Tuesday night, it would take me a year to get through all the Tuesday night meetings that are in the San Diego directory, that are within driving distance. So not the ones out in El Centro, just the ones in San Diego County, here in this local area. It would take me more, there are more than 52 meetings on Tuesday nights alone, outside of the female-specific meetings that I can't attend. Well, I guess I could if I was real desperate. If they'd have me. So before there was this epidemic of meetings, you know, the book said, you know, we may be the only person that drunk sees, and that armed with this book, we can help any alcoholic. You know, and I believe that that's true. So, happy birthday to the birthday people. And especially my friend Roxanne, wherever she is. There she is. Double X, baby. Yeah, I love it. And Lupe. Lupe, 2 years. And Juan, where are you, man? Right on. I remember when Juan straggled back in about a year ago. Yeah. He's right. He's lucky he didn't die. He is. You know, and we're all lucky. We're all lucky that we're sitting here. You know, and I'm gonna end it with this, because it's something that has become really important to me. And it comes from a guy who's sitting on the side wall over there. Some days better than others. And for the last, 4 years now, I've heard him say, all I have is this moment. And I've really come to terms with that, Kirk. Really have, man. You know, my problems yesterday I can't do anything about. My problems tomorrow I can't do anything about. You know, all I get to do is deal with what's right in front of me, and I'm not perfect. So I still have that resistance all the time. This year has been a very difficult year from the beginning of the year for me. No purpose, no motivation. And every time I look at something, I look at it and there's nothing but resistance in me. It says, I don't want to do this, and I'm not forcing myself to do it. And the best I've been able to do is go out and service people and then go back home and quote-unquote rest. You know? And I have no idea what tomorrow has in store for me, but I do know what today has in store for me. And today, I'm not going to drink. And with that, I hear the duck quacking. And I want to let you know, thank you for the folks who came up here to support me. I love you. And for the rest of you, you know, who are regulars at this group, you know, I hope that I've been able to bring you something that's been useful, that will help you not drink tonight. And I want to thank the group for inviting me to be here.